Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Life is precious and it's short. Even if it feels long, and it is long in some ways, it is very short. Our chance to actually be a benefit in it is, you know, there's so much suffering and confusion in the world.
Welcome to Radically Loved Radio. I am your host, Rosie Acosta, yoga teacher and teacher trainer, mindfulness coach, speaker, and creative writer. I am also the founder of RadicallyLoved.com, a website where you can go for more information about yoga, mindfulness, meditation, and lifestyle advice. On this podcast, we talk to people within our health and wellness community that are creating content through the ritualistic practice of yoga, meditation, or overall mindful living. We hope to create value in your life so that you can achieve your highest potential and live a radically loved life. To stay in touch with us, just follow me on Instagram and Twitter, at Rosie Acosta, and on Facebook at Radically Loved Rosie. You can sign up for our newsletter on RadicallyLoved.com to stay up to date on future workshops, retreats, and latest podcasts. I hope that Radically Loved Radio leaves you feeling inspired to create something powerful. My teacher, Yoga Rupa Rajstriker, says, if you powerfully believe in the value you have to offer the world, your love and passion for it will be an unstoppable force. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Four Sigmatic. Four Sigmatic, the coffee that gets you fired up. Aside from supporting energy, stamina, and athletic performance, cordyceps have been studied for their strong antioxidant properties. I have been so obsessed with this coffee for the last year. I've been drinking it and I've been traveling with it. And in case coffee doesn't pump you up enough, how about coffee paired with one of the most energy-supporting mushrooms on the planet, cordyceps? So coffee is so energizing because it stimulates the central nervous system and the adrenal glands. But combining this with a more balanced cellular energy to support our immune system and our health function, this mushroom can result in a balanced stimulation while using only half of the amount of caffeine normally found in a coffee, which is awesome. They also have an incredible matcha mix that is my absolutely new favorite, and they want to give our listeners a gift. So for those of you who are curious and want to try the mushroom coffee that doesn't taste like mushrooms, go to foursigmatic.com/radicallyloved. So that's foursigmatic.com/radicallyloved for 15% off of all of their products. Thanks for listening. Your work and everything that you've written about and what you've created has focused so much on, I said earlier when we were talking, but really adding value to the world. And I don't want to limit it to just the health and wellness industry, because I feel like it goes way above and beyond that. So
first of all, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I've been a fan from afar for a very long time. And I think that we have a lot of mutual friends.
I'm sure.
But I really have, anytime I'm looking for real journalism or the truth about a topic, maybe it's a topic that's going on in the yoga world or something, Elephant Journal is definitely the place I go for a real point of view. How did you decide that that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, well, I was, you know, I was a funny little kid. I grew up in the Buddhist community in Boulder, and I loved writing. I'm not totally sure how that started. I loved baseball, and I think I wanted to become a baseball writer for some reason. I think I read a lot. I think I remember being eight and thinking about being a baseball writer. I was like pretty obsessed with baseball.
Okay.
I was pretty good at it too, so I'm curious why I didn't fantasize about being a baseball star. It's odd. Maybe I did. But anyway, so my father was a writer. My mom is, you know, like a Shakespeare scholar and a writer, writing teacher. And maybe that's why. Maybe it was just like a family thing. And I realized pretty quickly, you know, I grew up pretty poor with a single mom, and that, you know, writing was a great way to stay poor. Even then, back in the like 80s, you know, when journalism was super healthy, I felt like I needed to find a way to make money writing, because I had this entrepreneurial thing. It wasn't really entrepreneurial. Like in the Buddhist world, they talk about being a benefit, or we talk about it. And, you know, that life is precious and it's short, even if it feels long, and it is long in some ways, it is very short. Our chance to actually be a benefit. And as you know, there's so much suffering and confusion in the world. Even in beautiful Venice and LA, people are going through, you know, suffering internally often. Yeah. So I wanted to be of some benefit, and writing seemed like a good way to do that. And when it came time, I wanted to start I worked at Chabal Publications in Boston, which is a wonderful publisher. But, you know, I made $8.50 an hour, and they kept me at 39 hours a week so that I didn't get health care. And I just realized, like, writing is not a world that, unless you own stuff, you're not going to do well. So, and my mentors were all, you know, culture's changing so rapidly in good ways. My mentors were all men, and they were all completely uninterested in mentoring me. You know, it was a very sort of like the patriarchal kind of thing. And they were great guys. Like, I still know them and love them. But they, like, really weren't interested in mentoring. So I sought out mentors. I was always good at that. I didn't have a father, so I think I naturally was, like, seeking out people to teach me, whether it was, like, how to shave or basketball or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was super broke up until, like, 28. I was, like, eating day-old muffins and just kind of figuring it out. And I worked for Shambhala Mountain Center, which is a top 10 retreat in the US. And my mentor there, my boss, actually enjoyed young people and taught me stuff. And it was probably the first time I found someone who enjoyed mentoring, other than like my childhood summer camp, Buddhist summer camp guy, who was amazing. I just interviewed him on our show, which was a thrill. My childhood summer camp.
Oh, I love that.
He was amazing. But so I worked there. I learned business, and I learned program development, and I hosted Cindy Lee and Richard Freeman as our first yoga program at Shambhala. Like, two of the best.
Yeah.
Like, by the best, I mean integrity.
Absolutely, yeah.
Caring and humor. And then I wanted... But I was making $30,000 a year. I was like doing a ton of work. I was like basically number two in the entire fundraising arm. We raised $12.5 million, built all these buildings, and I couldn't even get a raise. Like, I went for a raise, and he was like, "Look, you're not good at priorities," which I'm still not good at. I like doing everything, kind of. And I was like, "You know what? You're right." And I've heard that feedback from you year after year, and don't think that's my strength. And we just like amicably parted ways over lunch spontaneously instead of getting a raise. And I went to Naropa University briefly, got a ton of debt, left quickly before I got more debt, because they don't have any, as things probably should be, they didn't have any grants for white males. It's a small university, and all the grants went to people who, you know, whatever, culturally deserve it more. So I left, but it was a great experience, the writing school, and we created tons of trouble. We started this whole, like, only in Boulder could, like, a movement, a meditation movement, be, like, revolutionary and hip. We started this whole meditation gang. Because nobody in Naropa was meditating anymore. It had, like, kind of got away from its roots.
Yeah.
And then I was going to go back and start journalism. And I was living up at Chautauqua, if you know Boulder.
Yeah.
In a little cabin, cottage. And I stepped outside and ran into my neighbor, who was an actual journalist, Ashley, and a yoga teacher. And she was on her way to do laundry. And I was like, hey, any tips for, I'm going to get back into journalism? She was like, hey, you should go check this guy out, Travis. He's trying to start a magazine. He has no idea what he's doing, but he's a good guy. So I went by. I said, hey, I'd love to write an article for you for free. He said, like, be my partner. I was like, no. I was like, I don't want to make awful money for more years doing something I love. Like, I've done that for, you know, my whole life. So this is the short story, the short version, believe it or not, because I know it's long. Is this the right amount of depth?
Yeah, that's good. So I love to hear stories like that where especially you had tried something that really wasn't working and it almost kind of created this disillusionment to something that you were so passionate about, right?
Yeah. I mean, are you talking about like doing what you love and making no money or
exactly. Yeah.
Or doing what you hate but making good money.
Right.
The dichotomy. Not to rag on men too much, but like that's the patriarchal dichotomy of exploitation through business that we've all grown up with. And B Corp and other wonderful organizations are saying, no, you can be a benefit and make good money. Imagine.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Bronner's, Patagonia, there's certain businesses who do that.
Yeah. So cut to.
Yeah. So I sat down with this guy. I said, but I would be interested in partnering if you want to partner. So we became 50-50 partners. He quit like a couple months later. Because I always say he was smarter than me. He realized like this, there was no money in this. We were printing like newsprint. His wife was on the cover. She's a wonderful yoga teacher, trained with Richard Freeman and others. And, John Friend, I think back in the day. And anyway, I just stuck with it. I put my lifetime savings in it, which wasn't much, but it was a lot to me. And just like grew it. I handed it to my Buddhist teacher at the time. I was like, so proud of the first issue. And he looked at it and he went, it's very small. And I was like, oh, it was pretty funny, but I was so proud. And because I feel like everything's so easy now, like podcasts and Facebook Live and Instagram, LinkedIn. But like growing up in the 90s, back in the day with broke, you had no idea how to start a business. Like Kickstarter didn't exist.
No, they didn't have anything.
The idea of me writing a book was like so hard. You have to get an agent and you're nobody. And how do you even do this stuff?
Yeah.
And now it's like, we love to complain about technology and all that, but there's a real sense of that you can figure it out right now.
Yeah.
Through networking.
Yeah. So now where you are, you've created this incredible platform that is so vast. Did you ever think that you'd get it to this point back then?
Yes, I did. I was sitting down with Travis, my initial partner, and I was good at writing, and I was good at doing the reviews, and I figured out how to message companies and get products to review, which I had no idea how to do, and I turned out to be good at selling ads, and like I was like, you know, none of this is bragging. Like for anyone who's listening, or you know, maybe you in your life, like. When you find what you're actually good at, you're like, oh, I'm home. I can actually contribute here. So I wasn't great at everything, but I was like good enough at enough of the parts.
Right.
And so I just stuck with it. And I really had this feeling like I didn't know how to grow fast, but I knew how to grow steadily.
Yeah.
And we very soon we weren't newsprint. When it was more beautiful and it was eco paper and we went national and Whole Foods and all that stuff. And it just was like fun. It was exhausting and you burn out and you have deadlines, but it was fun and meaningful. And yeah. I was psyched still to get up every day doing it.
How did you manage to differentiate yourself from all the other, there wasn't very many at the time, right? But how did you manage to differentiate yourself from other online publications or print publications yeah. at the time?
Well, so that's a great question. So, you know, I always wanted the voice of Elephant to be almost like the voice of the New Yorker, like good reporting. We're not nearly as good as the New Yorker.
Well,
I worship them.
I can say that you are.
But. Yeah, I'll take that and just hold that compliment. But you just have a warm, quirky, like your voice, anyone's voice, it's not my voice, it's anyone's actual voice is the voice of Elephant. And bringing that out is the job of the editors that we work with, who are a great team. And I think, you know, we want it to be accessible. Our mission is to reach beyond the choir to all those who may give a care. So our mission is not to, like, the initial name of the magazine that Travis was starting was called Yoga in the Rockies. And when he left, I changed it to Elephant because I didn't want it to be about yoga. I don't, in a funny way, care about the yoga community in terms of itself. I think the yoga community, like my Buddhist teacher would always say, turn the flower outwards. Like, yoga people care about music. Yoga people care about farmers market. Yoga people care about gun violence. Yoga people care about inequality. Yoga people care about lunch. You know, like, what do we care about? So Elephant was meant to be about everything and outside of the choir, not for us, but for all of us. And when we went online, I had a lot of good colleagues who were rocking online, and we went online just as soon as it was basically free to do so. In the very early days, you know, Huffington Post and everyone had to kind of create their own blogging platform. And then WordPress and stuff came along and it became free. So I jumped on there. I was like, wow, you can publish for free and people can read in Mongolia like 2 seconds later. It's magic. To me, it was like Harry Potter stuff. Like, you know, the newspaper has the moving video on the train to Hogwarts. And I was like, you can put a video in an article now. You can link a word, Trumpa. When you're writing in the magazine, we had to explain what Chigim Trumpa was or who. But in the blog, you don't have to because you can just link it to an article and someone can click it or not. And so to me, blogging is far superior to print. I know that's unpopular to say, but it's magic. You can link stuff. You can put videos in. It's an exciting time. And you can reach anyone. So then from then on, it grew far more quickly. Then I kind of got the confidence. I rocked Twitter. I rocked Facebook. We won awards on Twitter nationally for environmental coverage twice. And Facebook, we were like bigger than Huffington Post on Facebook until Facebook started offering the paid
ads.
The paid reach or whatever that, you know, then we couldn't compete, but we just grew organically. We're hard to beat.
Yeah. It's interesting that you use the New Yorker as sort of the barometer, because for me, that's what I called the Elephant Journal. I'm like, that's the New Yorker of what's really happening in, you know, our community or the world of mindfulness, yoga, meditation, and environmentalism, you know, like all of those things. So,
and that was the other answer. I would say our voice was not about any one thing.
Yeah.
It is for the yoga community. It is for the environmental community, but it's for us to care beyond our own communities. And I think the mix, so my parents' teacher, Chigim Trungpa, had said, when East meets West, the sparks will fly. And I think that applies to when you combine yoga and service and gardening and bicycling and family, like when you combine all of these different things that too often get siloed, then the magic happens, the sparks fly.
Yeah.
You're not a demographic, you know, readers aren't a demographic.
Right. And I think that the people who know you and know your work can see that and feel that. And I think that you've done a really great job at also creating an empowering platform of your readers to contribute and to like be part of this community.
Yeah.
Tell me about your passion for the environment.
Well, I would say we have two existential threats in the world today. And I'm not a parent, but if I were, I would take them very seriously in terms of making that decision to have children or not. Or I would, if I had kids, I would be incredibly freaked out, frankly, about these two things. One is nuclear war, which is, not to bum everyone out, but it's almost a certainty it's going to happen. And it probably will happen because of rogue nuclear weapons that, until the last year, have been relatively secured around the world by many countries working together to make sure no terrorists or rogue enterprises can get a hold of nuclear weapons. But the State Department, the Energy Department, have been devastated. More than 60% of the civil servants who are skilled and serve under any administration have quit in which department is it? State Department. And suddenly we're not funding keeping track of nuclear weapons in the world, which is insane. It only, as we've seen with Kim Jong-un or even our own president, you know, having a trigger finger near a nuclear weapon is not okay. And the other one is climate change. And climate change is even scarier because it's already here and it's coming and no one seems to care. People talk about caring, but in our daily actions, we don't reflect that caring. And to cheer things up, environmentalism is super fun. Like once you get into it, it literally is a meditation practice in your daily life. You don't have to just meditate in the morning or the evening or whatever. Remembering to slow down, and whether it's taking off your shoes or getting a, not, you know, skipping the to-go cup or remembering your bag or, you know, taking the time to bike or walk or public transport or, you know, if you have an electric car and solar power or whatever, like, you know, everyone loves to make fun of the sort of Portlandia aspect of all this stuff. And I think you should, because making fun of yourself is so healthy and it makes you enjoy the stuff instead of being self-righteous. But I just wrote about this, but I feel like people are so afraid of being earnest about anything. Like, it's okay to care.
Yeah.
You know, and all my friends, like, I'm vegan, but most of my friends aren't. And I always say, that's fine. Just boycott factory farming. Everyone agrees that's an evil.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, so does that mean you never eat meat or cheese in a restaurant unless you know the source? And they're like, they never even ask. So it's like, walk your talk. That's what my video series is called. And, you know, when I had to give up nachos with cheese from factory farming in Mountain Sun, my favorite pub in Boulder, I was so mad. Having those amazing nachos and a beer was like a ritual in Boulder. And I'm a big boy. And they were huge. I loved them. And they were so good. I still miss them. But it's like the out of sight, out of mind thing is like such a sad thing, whether it's race or inequality or, like, this morning I was biking from, like, I was meeting Sean Korn for breakfast at Cafe Gratitude, and then I'm biking to Intelligentsia, and on the way you see, like, homeless camped out, and I actually appreciate that about Venice, that it's not hidden, it's right there, you know? I was down in Anaheim, and they literally had cleared the tunnels of all the homeless. They had, like, shipped them off somewhere. You're like, wow. So the whole out-of-sight thing is, I just encourage people to kind of get real with yourself and say, what are my values?
Well, I think that so much of that comes from this idea that if we don't talk about it, it's not really there. It's like death, right? Like, nobody ever talks about death or dying because why? It's just as prevalent as people being born.
Or sickness, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's such a huge thing, you know, and, you know, I've read Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche's book on spiritual bypassing or, you know, spiritual materialism, right?
Great.
And so I think that part of us not being able to really see those things or see things through fully is a big issue, or having the courage to speak our truth or actually say the things that are on our mind without fear. And I think right now, just with what's happening in the world and our culture, everyone's kind of going into this, like, fear-based, non-reactive. Everyone's afraid to offend people, or they're afraid to say what's really on their mind, or afraid to really stand up for maybe what they believe in. And I think that if we really start to list the things that are important, like potential nuclear war, climate change, social inequality, racism, you know, like all of these things. If we're able to have an honest conversation, then I think that we can really begin to see things change, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the major dangers that you've touched on with the race and the inequality stuff, the social justice stuff, is that, as Trump Rinpoche again said, you know, aggression creates aggression. So we can be activists, and we need to be activists in those areas and care. And, you know, the time is now. The time was, I mean, we are making fast progress. I was just having coffee with a friend, and I was like, 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to vote. Like, things are moving, but they need to, like, we want them all to move all the way now. And I think that's right. We expect that. We know. Yeah. We know better now. And but I think the obstacle is aggression by activists. An obstacle, I should say. Because, like, I just wrote about feminism, and a friend of mine, basically, just who's a feminist, like, condemned me for whatever I said. And I didn't even say what she was saying I was saying. She was, like, just angry. And there's some level of, like, we need to encourage people to speak up and to be dumb and to ask dumb questions. I interviewed this young African-American lady who wrote this amazing article on Elephant called The Only Black Girl in the Yoga Room or something. And it was a beautiful blog, and I asked her if I could interview her. And I was like pretty like tiptoeing on tulips or whatever, because I'm a big old white guy, you know? And she just like disarmed me from the first second. She was cheerful and open and vulnerable and confident and just ready to talk about any of these scary issues. And we really got into it because she was so open.
Yeah.
And I was able to say, so, you know, like, I don't want to be offended. You know, none of us, hopefully, on the right side of the fence, at least, want to be offensive.
Right.
But we're scared to be offensive.
Right. And I think that that's sort of part of what's crippling us into being and showing up fully as we can, because that's fear is still driving us, right?
Right.
So
and the aggression scares allies off,
right?
Which may you can blame the allies, like buck up, be brave, whatever. You've had it good for millennia,
yeah.
Like show some courage, but at the same time, like, you know, as many people have said, feminism, this is what a feminist looks like. Like, everyone should be feminist. We want everyone on board. We don't just want to be territorial about being right.
Right. And I think that this whole thing with what you're saying, as far as, you know, your friends, you know, supporting the vegan movement, but then them not boycotting, you know, where their meat is coming from or something, you know, it's just like how people will stand up for an issue on a social platform, but then not follow through. Like, everyone has, small keyboard courage,
right,
and then they won't actually do the follow through. And I think that that's sort of, you know, I feel like this is a big issue, and it's a big issue with everything, because it's like people then want to create boxes and put people in them, like your feminist friends, like, oh, this is what a feminist should look like. But I'm like, yeah, but you're then taking away from maybe people that don't look like this or don't do it. I think that part of what, for me, you know, using yoga as a way to live, right? And knowing that yoga means union, and yoga is about, you know, bringing the unconscious conscious, right? It's a lifestyle. It's what you were saying, like turning the flower outward. It's a holistic approach. And if I say, well, because you do yoga at 24-Hour Fitness and I do yoga at an ashram, I'm a yogi and you're not, I think that that's ridiculous, you know, to say that, because I have no idea. You know, this person could leave that room and go and volunteer at a homeless shelter and be practicing yoga more than I am.
Yeah.
You know?
It's complicated stuff, because while I agree with it when you put it that way, if you put it the opposite way, like, you know, going to yoga with loud music and, you know, no teaching on alignment or breath is basically aerobics, and that's not actual yoga. I also would agree with that to a certain degree. I think it's a little judgmental, but I think genuine yoga, there is something extra there. There's some spiritual awakening, or as right. you were saying, how did you put it? Like the conscious.
Making the unconscious conscious. Yeah.
But at the same time, going to 24-hour fitness, doing that aerobics yoga is a gateway, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of all good. But at the same time, there are differences.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, I was blessed in Boulder to get to study with Richard Freeman forever, I was never a serious yoga. I would just go and... But I remember, like, one of my first classes, I was trying to do, like, a backward bend, you know, and I'm, like, probably 30 at the time, and I have, like, no flexibility. And he bends over me and, you know, pulls me up by my sort of shoulder blades.
Uh-huh.
And my lungs, like, went... like, took this breath I had literally in 30 years never once taken, maybe 28 years old. And and he just did it with a big smile. And you're like, wow, this yoga is powerful stuff.
Yeah.
It changed my life, that little
bit. Well, Richard Freeman's also a master teacher.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's just incredible. I love him. I've had the opportunity to practice and study with him a little bit too. And I think he's just.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
But there's so many good ones.
Yeah,
too.
There are. And there are some too. And I don't want to get into that topic. We'll go on.
Yeah, there's so many roads.
Yeah, there's so many roads. So I'm actually curious to talk to you about the social media platform, because we were talking about this just before we started actually recording, about how it can be used as a form of creating more connection with, you know, maybe people, but, you know, people can also see this platform as creating more separation, or maybe creating more unhappiness with people who utilize it as a way to bring themselves down or feel like they're not a part of something. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, social media, I think most people understand that it's basically like low-grade kryptonite, and, you know, for our superhero selves, like, you can go and work with it, and it's powerful stuff, and you can change the world. It's basically just communication. Nothing's wrong with it. But if you do it for longer than a little bit, you get kind of sucked in, and you get weaker, and you get depressed, and bad things happen. And or maybe it's like the ring in Tolkien. I don't know what the analogy is. Like, if you keep it on for too long, you start something wrong, bad happens.
Something bad happens, that's great,
And then the other danger is you get full of yourself, so it is like the ring, because the ring makes you all kind of egotistical.
So
it's like the ring. My precious.
I know.
And I was just having I was sort of, making fun of, so I was meeting a whole bunch of like yogi celebs at Cafe Gratitude in Venice the other day for lunch, which is one of the most LA sentences possible. But, and from a Boulder boy point of view, people in LA are super inspiring, because you're actually doing things for the world. There's a big platform, and people are ambitious in a good and bad way. But from a negative point of view, you can take pride in your followers. You can take pride in your fans. You can, Black Mirror style, you can be like, I am valid because I have 1.6 million followers on Instagram. And that's, again, just the danger of getting high on your own supply. You're doing this to be of service. So in Buddhism, they say, if you want to be happy, think first of others. Self-care, taking care of yourself is vital. But think first of others. Even in caring for yourself, there's an attitude of you're doing it so that you can be of benefit. And if you want to be miserable, think only of yourself. And I think social media don't want to offend you, I haven't looked at your account, but a lot of my friends, every single one of their photos on Instagram, like every single one, every day, all year, are photos of themselves. And
mine isn't like that, so
I don't even know maybe I'm lacking in, I've never been accused of not being, people have accused me of being full of myself more than the opposite. But like, I don't know how I would take photos of myself every day. Like, what would I? I'm not interested.
Yeah.
So I think that's the danger of social media, is that you can get depressed, you can get isolated, like you said, separated.
Yeah.
But you can also get full of yourself, which is a different kind of separation and depression. Mm-hmm. And then, but it, you can use it, like we've seen with the gun protests yesterday across the nation.
Yeah.
Students have used it on Snapchat, etc., to communicate and to coordinate. And but it's so moving. They're just standing up and saying, no more, never again. And it will continue, not to get back into politics, unless we actually make changes, which we won't. This time around, unless we keep speaking up.
Right.
So
right.
It's a complicated world, but basically social media is incredibly empowering too. Like Kickstarter, la la la. Like
yeah.
A boy with like no money built, you know, we reached 23 million readers, and then Facebook has cut us, whittled us down over the last 4 years, but we're still big, and we're building our own social media now so that we can. What the world needs, if the government were more powerful and more just, the government would, and no one likes the idea of this, but everyone's fine with Alexa in your kitchen, is there needs to be a non-profit for-benefit social media that allows everyone to connect and communicate, but doesn't allow it to be used for nefarious purposes or even just monetizing your private messages with your partner, you know, which is weird.
Yeah. Interesting.
So
yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think for you in your life, you've obviously had a very mindful upbringing. So you've had the, to me, I'm like...
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, right? Somebody like me is totes jelly of, you know, that. Because I think it's incredible to be able to grow up having that,
yeah.
that foundation. And I feel like it definitely speaks to your character and what you've created, because I feel like that is transferred in everything that you do, and it shows up in everything that you touch and everything that you're wanting to create. It's exactly what you were saying. You're self-care first, but you're thinking about how this is impacting your interconnectedness with the other.
Yeah.
Right? So right now in your life, what is your... I don't like to use the word like goal, right? But it's like, what is your biggest intention right now with what is it that you want to create next?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the like mindful upbringing, I mean, it really was to my mom's credit, and she didn't have a good upbringing. So she just like made it happen, and she worked her butt off, and she was broke the whole time, and it was tough. And you know, my little generation of second generation Buddhists were called Dharma brats, which was a play on army brat or Dharma bums. But I love the word brat because the notion is that you've been given a ton, and if you don't give it away, you're spoiled. You've been spoiled. So if you don't pass it on tenfold. So that's what I want to do to answer your question. I want to, I interviewed this guy, this environmental hero of mine, Lester Brown, years ago, and he said media... our education is the key to saving the world. Like, it's actually doable to cheer people up if I've depressed them about anything. Like, we can change the world just by communicating and listening. And often people think of communicating in, again, the patriarchal kind of like
talking at
you. Converting people kind of way.
Yeah.
But listening is a huge part of it. And that includes with people who you might disagree with. And, you know, when I see people calling every Trump fan a racist or whatever, like sometimes that's true and that should be called out, hopefully in a gentle, fair conversation making way. There's this wonderful black guy, there's a documentary about him on Netflix, and he goes around just like meeting with Klan leaders and stuff. He's like, he's my idol. Like, he's not calling them racists, or if he is, he's stating it as a fact, but that's not an accusation. He's like wanting to talk, and he actually converts these people into, they realize he's a nice guy. And they're like, oh, this N-word guy is a really nice guy. Maybe I shouldn't be racist. It's really sweet. But yeah, so in a concrete way, my goal or my intention is to make Elephant huge again. and even bigger, one of the top sites in the world, like a Reddit or a New York Times, which I worship, so I don't say that lightly. And for whatever mistakes the New York Times or any journalistic enterprise ever makes, and they do make mistakes, they are beholden to report the truth and to correct themselves when they mess up. And that's what I respect in a human being or journalism. And then I'll die. I'll be done. I'll be exhausted. Just to make a big platform that, like you said, everyone can communicate. It's not my platform. It's not my point of view particularly.
Right.
And then I'll be good. Hey, buddy.
Why do you think that journalism...
Shoes.
Do you think we have a visitor, guys?
Yeah, Brandy.
Brandy's making a guest appearance on the show.
That's right. It's like a sitcom. People
exactly. We need the clap track.
Yeah, exactly.
Yay. Do you think that real journalism is a dying art?
Oh, for sure. I think actually Trump has been fantastic for journalism. However, Trump should be Edward R. Murrow should be every journalist's hero, and then Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has threatened journalism again and again and again and again in a way that Republicans aren't comfortable with.
Right.
And I think, you know, we've seen subscriptions to Washington Post or New York Times or whomever just spike. So in a funny way, he's been great for people appreciating it. That said, there's been a real undermining of journalism by the left and the right. You know, people will share diatribes about how wonderful Bernie Sanders is or how evil Hillary Clinton is or how wonderful Trump is or whatever. And none of these things have that much connection to facts or reporting or truth. They're just opinions, but in the form of journalism. So when I see, you know, I supported Bernie, I donated to him. But when I see these left-wing blogs shared up, there's just as much aggression and just as little connection to the truth as I see in right-wing stuff. So everyone needs to understand that we all want to insult mainstream media, but media is a meaningless term. Media is entertainment. Media means Netflix. Media means CNBC. Media means New Yorker. It means good and bad. Media is just a thing. It's like saying trees. It's not a particular kind of tree. A particular kind of tree within media is journalism. And journalism, whether it's The Economist on the right or New York Times, which people say is on the left, they have both kinds of people on their opinion pages, which are transparently labeled. Yeah. So opinion is fine if it's labeled as such. We need to have a common working understanding of facts. And when a lot of people think that Hillary Clinton is in part of a pedophile ring in a basement of a restaurant that doesn't even have a basement, we have a problem. And that's not a right-left problem. That's a fact, alternative fact problem.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, in a fun way, I think Elephant is trying to address that through, we're creating our own social media, which we call the ecosystem, so that we can kind of get away from Facebook and Twitter, where everyone's just so boxing at each other.
Yeah. So I think that just creating an equilibrium of facts and being able to have a dialogue or a conversation where you're debating actual factual evidence.
Yeah.
If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your 15-year-old self, if any?
Wow, that's good advice. Good question. How long would I have?
You would have like a couple sentences. Just that's it.
I'd probably say meditate even more. I've meditated a fair amount, but meditation tends to be kind of not the first thing on my priority list. I do it twice a day, but I'm very speedy, and meditation slows that down and brings me into the present, and it's such good stuff. We have endless amount of time to like scroll online and just diddle around watching Netflix movies we don't even like. But meditation, we're like rushing. We're like, you know, I have 5 minutes, and maybe 20 minutes.
Or yeah.
So, and I've done a lot, but, you know, I need more. And then number two, I would say, you know, I really grew up with the point of view in Buddhism that all human beings are basically good. And Buddhism talks about an exception to that rule, which is called Rudrahood, which is if you completely buy into your own thoughts and your own self-interest, you can actually be kind of a bad person. And you stop, it's sort of like the alternative facts we were talking about. You stop recognizing the actual truth of the world and you start just living by your own kind of craziness. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really understand that as a kid. And I think that would have helped me protect myself a little bit better from sort of crazy people in the world. Because, you know, when you're in media and you're doing business stuff, you run into a lot of, you run into everybody, really. There's a couple people out there who don't, who are having a hard time and who are a little bit malevolent, not because they're bad people, but because they're believing their own thoughts completely.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that.
Mm-hmm. So. What would your 95-year-old self tell you now?
Meditate more, yet again. Probably, oh, that's a great question. Probably, for sure, travel, take some time off, have a family and children, and stop working all the time. Probably, like, enjoy a little bit of life, which for many years was, I didn't have time for it because I was doing great, inspiring stuff. And at this point, it's probably more of a habit that I don't take time for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like my default is to say, no, I don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
So this trip, I actually came close. I left my passport behind. I usually take it wherever I travel. This time I came close to being like, I don't have to be back in Boulder for a couple of weeks. I'm going to go to Japan or New Zealand or like, I'm just going, you know, just keep going. So I'm getting close.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
What does freedom mean?
I mean, from a Buddhist point of view, as well as my point of view, I would say it means being present, not being subject or subjugated by your own discursive neurotic mind, and actually being open and being, that's what people call your best self. That's just your true self. It's not even your best self. It just is who you are.
Yeah. What is love?
Love. Well, I wrote a whole book about that. But love is, not that I found any answers, but love is...
give them a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Maybe you did.
Yeah, so love is, again, from a Buddhist point of view, is two open people who are listening as well as talking. I mean, that's what making love or dancing is. It's a interplay, a give and take. But with an acknowledgement that there's space between, so that you're always alone, but that's not a negative thing. They're always a little bit lonely, but that's not a negative thing. That space is actually provides room for lack of claustrophobia, lack of clinginess, always a sense of tenderness and humor and flirtation, and all these wonderful things can go through that space when you don't feel the need to fuse into one kind of claustrophobic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So and then the relationship can be a benefit. You can walk the path of it not all being about your relationship, but about helping each other be your best selves to help the world.
Yeah.
That was a long answer.
No, I love it. So good.
Yeah.
So part of why I created this podcast and this forum was to create a place for people to go to listen to people's stories about ritual or their belief system. It's really about creating a community where we're all like-minded. We believe in the interconnectedness of each other. Radically loved is this idea that we are radically loved by Source, God, Buddha, whatever, baby Krishna. I always use all of them. Like, whatever it is, whatever power of your understanding, we are all loved and supported by the universe, and we're radically loved, right? So there's that thread. So the question to you is, there's two. How do you feel radically loved? And what do you radically love?
I don't know that I do feel radically loved. I think that's a powerful, powerful notion that you were just discussing that I think I forget about, and I think a lot of us forget about. We feel conditionally loved. I feel very loved by various people in my life, but radically loved, I think there is some notion of being completely open and humble in the context of the entire, whatever we're talking about, universe, but bigger than that. But I do feel blessed. I feel blessed to be alive and to be healthy and to be able to be of some service, however much. So it's a good reminder to open to that. So thank you. And then, what do I radically love? I think I really do radically love this crazy species known as humankind. I mean, I think we're totally hopeless and messed up and wonderful and, you know, I was just listening to Louis Armstrong this morning. He has What a Wonderful World. I actually didn't hear that one this morning, but that's such a great song because it has that cheerfulness and that a little bit of heartbreak or tenderness or sadness in it. And if we can work to save ourselves from ourselves, which I don't have a lot of confidence in, given that we can't even agree on common sense gun reform, let alone radical love, which would be everything, we could really enjoy this beautiful world instead of just kind of selfishly enjoying it and exploiting it as a society.
Yeah.
So, but not giving up hope is kind of, and trying every day. You know, Yvon Chouinard, who's one of my idols of Patagonia, says, we might be completely effed, but I'm still going to wake up in the morning and work as hard as I can to save what little I can, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thank you so much, Waylon.
Hey, thank you.
This has just been so, so great. And I feel like this definitely is going to merit another conversation because I feel like we kind of just covered, we've got just like iceberg questions answered. So for the people listening who want a little bit more information about you and what you're doing, where can people go for more information if they want to connect with you or if they want to buy a book, etc.?
Right, the book is at elephantjournal.com/books, and the second one will be there as well. In terms of me, I'm all over. I'm on Elephant. I write a daily editor's letter, which is probably the best thing I write now. I don't write that much anymore. Because I'm running a business and a staff and stuff. It's weird. I used to write all the time. But yeah, that's at elephantjournal.com/best. If you want to subscribe and get the newsletter. And the newsletter is like our online magazine. So it's our best articles of the day as well as my newsletter. And, you know, probably you guys will disagree with it sometimes or love it sometimes. Like, I'm getting into it. Like we were talking about having those scary conversations.
Yeah.
I get into stuff. And so there's not an expectation in Elephant or in my own self that people will be fans. I think that's a weird word. I think people are equals and will agree and disagree and hopefully contribute articles to Elephant or your own podcast or blog or whatever and discuss with respect.
Yes. I love that. So for those of you listening, all of those links that he just mentioned are on the show notes. So you can click on the show notes and they will directly take you to all of those places. So thank you. So much.
Thank you. You're great at this. You're a pro.
It's
a good experience.
Thank you all for listening.
Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I am so excited to continue to do this. Please share this with your friends. Email us, message us on Instagram at Rosie Acosta or on Twitter at Rosie Acosta. Subscribe on iTunes, write a review. We love doing this, so please help us continue to keep this podcast going. Thanks for listening.
We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.